Welcome to a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I am Fred Lambert, your host, and as usual, I'm joined by Seb Wintrom. How are you doing today, Seb?
I'm good.
All right, so let's jump right into the news this week. We have, it was kind of a slow news week, but we still have a few items that I think are going to be really interesting to discuss, and a lot of things that are probably going to launch some new discussions and things like that. So if you guys want to jump into the comment section and talk about it with us, you're welcome to. Let's just put myself into focus so we don't get all these notifications coming in. There we go. All right. So we're going to start out with, since it's going to be our last podcast before the Tesla delivery results coming in early next week, probably on Monday, I think. Yep. Monday. So we're not going to be able to talk about it until next podcast, but there's been a lot of updates this week, a lot of analysts, again, downgrading their estimates. The consensus keeps going down, and it's all over the place. Like, people are just not on board. There's not a clear way where these deliveries are going to land. But now some of the more serious ones are really interesting, where it might look like not only Tesla is not growing at a higher rate anymore, it might be going down.
Shrinkage
in time of growth. So we talked a little bit about that possibility, but like kind of vaguely earlier this month. Now it's becoming more clear. Like even like Troy Teslaik, who's been one of the more consistent guy putting out quarterly delivery estimates, has downgraded now to 420,000 deliveries.
Convenient.
Yeah, I'm sure some people are going to like that number. But if you remember correctly, though, so last quarter, Tesla was 484,000 deliveries. That was a new record. Now, from Q4 to Q1, sometimes there's a pushback. Last year, it was up from Q4. Q1 was up from Q4. Q1 2023 was up from Q4 2022. So Tesla could have technically still beat that number. However, virtually all analysts agree that it's going to be below the Q4 numbers. But now some people think it's even going to be below the Q1 2023 numbers. So it would mean no growth at all year over year, which would be completely new for Tesla. Like something that hasn't happened in, I don't know when, probably like what, 7-8 years, something like that. Like,
yeah, been a while.
A long time. Like sometimes there's been not like Tesla has been, I had at one point, I think 2 years in a row of like quarter to quarter growth, which is absolutely insane, especially in the auto industry, which is seasonal. So it's normal to have like year over year growth, but quarter over quarter is crazy, especially maintaining that for 2 years. Now, not only we don't have that anymore, we might be going back to shrinkage, like you said. So Wedbush, they changed their estimate. Like a lot of this is putting a light on the Wall Street analysts too. Like there's some of them, like they get a bad name in general for sure. Like it's like car salesmen in some ways. Like I'm sure they're not the most trusted people in the world in terms of profession. But there are some that are good. There's some that are bad. There's some that are on their game and everything. But there's some people that just barely touched their estimate this quarter, even though a lot of people are like saying it's going to be a bad one. So Wedbush, for example, went from 475,000 estimated deliveries, which would have been very good, down 50,000 to 425,000. So what happened in the last few weeks? Wedbush just wake up and like, all right, let's put that down. But I'm seeing estimate from 420 to 480, which is a huge range. And I'm talking from like big Wall Street firms here. But Troy Teslaik, like I said, has been consistently reducing his estimate over since the beginning of the quarter. And he's now down to 420, up for 435 just a few weeks ago. And to Troy Teslaik's credit, he's one of the analyst was using, it's like a more data-driven analyst, the analysis, like where he's looking at actual like VIN numbers and all that. But so right now what I saw, that the overall consensus, if you get an average of Wall Street, it's 458,000 deliveries. But I think the consensus is just skewed too much upward because of so many analysts on Wall Street not updating the numbers right now. If they were to update the numbers, it'd probably be closer to 450. And so what I'm seeing right now, if anything less than 450 for Tesla this quarter would be bad. And if Troy Teslyk and some other analysts are right and it's closer to 420, 425, I think that's just awful for Tesla, because that literally means like it's not only not growing at a high rate, it's not growing at all. It's shrinking.
Do we have any, what was Tesla's guidance last quarter?
Well, that's the problem. Tesla is not big on guidance. Like they, unlike most other automakers or most other companies in general, they don't have precise guidance. Tesla's only guidance has been, we're going to grow this year. So it's not even a quarterly guidance. It's a yearly guidance, an annual one. And it's, we're going to grow at a significantly less high rate than we did in 2023, which was like 30% or so, I think, in 2023.
Right.
So 2024 should be significantly below 30%, but that can mean anything. That can mean like 0%. That can mean like 10%. Like what does that mean? We don't know. But we're going to keep an eye on this because this is obviously a big deal. Because Tesla, even with some demand issues because of macroeconomic circumstances and tougher competition and all that, Tesla has been able to still grow by slashing prices. It's still been doing that, but not to the same effect, it looks like.
Yeah, and those slashing of prices has kind of affected the rest of the industry because things like the Mach-E become a lot less enticing when the Model Y is $10,000 less or even more.
Exactly. All right, there's another aspect where Tesla is trying to get some money out of its fleet. It's through the full self-driving package. So the full self-driving package is where Tesla can get a lot of profits because it's just a software update at this point. The hardware has already been included in the cars. So if they can get someone, even a new delivery, but an existing vehicle to get it, it's going to just increase its revenue and profit greatly. Now Tesla is counting on its V12 that's been pushing out over the last week. We've talked about it last week. V12 seems to be now being pushed to a wider fleet. I still haven't got it, but Seth got it this week. And it's Tesla. Yeah, your background and AI background screws that up. So Tesla is banking that people are going to try it and then they're actually going to want to buy a full self-driving package. Because mind you, like full self-driving package, that we don't know the take rate of this, but from the only few data points that we were able to get, it looks like it's below 20% in North America, and globally is probably closer to 10%, if not lower than 10, because the rest of the world doesn't even have FSD beta, as also more limited versions of autopilot features. So it's due to regulation, I mean, and that limits the take rate, obviously. So if Tesla can boost that take rate, it's going to help. And Elon announced two new initiatives this week. One, everyone's get 1 month of free FSD beta trial. And the other one is Tesla's going to mandate that every new delivery of a car gets a demo by a Tesla employee. So you upload the full self-driving V12 in the car, which is not completed because even with that 1 month free trial that everybody's getting right now, if you buy with a referral code, you already got 3 months of free full self-driving. So pretty much, I would assume that most people that are buying a new Tesla are buying it with a referral code. If you do that, you get it 3 months. So you upload that software. Now the employee is going to push it right away. So that's the difference here. And then this is a little bit touchy where you have to request the FSD beta software from the car. It doesn't come standard in it, even if you bought it. Now, even if you have it for free for 3 months in the case of someone didn't buy it but bought the car with the referral code. So now Tesla is going to show you, okay, I'm going to request it for you at the delivery so that you can experience it. So now you're going to have it in your car. So that means as soon as you press that that stock down once or twice, depending on your configuration, you're going to be on FSD beta. So a lot of people are going to be on it now because technically if you have like a navigation put in, and you're on the highway and maybe you have autopilot, you want to put it on. Well, now that autopilot is FSD beta. And if you have the navigation in, it's going to take an exit for you. It's going to take an off-ramp and it's going to keep going on FSD beta. So something to keep in mind here.
Now, what if you have an older, like a Model 3 from 2018 that has the 2.5 hardware? Are you going to get FSD beta or are you going to just stick with autopilot?
No, you're going to have that self-driving computer at least.
So version three hardware and above.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to have it. So if you are 2.5, you can get the upgrade to 3, but you have to have the computer upgrade for that. And Tesla only delivered those to those who bought the FSD package. Like myself, for example, I had a 2.5 computer and my Model 3 was upgraded to a 3 when I bought the FSD package. But yeah, actually, I bought it at launch, and then when it was ready, they send me the self-driving computer.
Are you talking about the launch where Elon said that every car made from now on will be able to drive itself?
Yeah, to be fair, he did add the caveat, like the computing power may have to be upgraded at some point. So that was always some, like we didn't hammer Tesla too much on that, other than when they made people pay for the subscription, though. That
Yeah.
was a little bit weird, where you had to pay for the computer for the subscription. That was a bad move from Tesla, and I think that's when we got blocked too when we reported on that.
I think
That's,
the initial block.
yeah, the first block that we got from Elon Musk was when we alighted that. That wasn't cool. Anyway, now the other thing, and that plays into maybe the delivery results here, is that also that. Mandate to demo the full self-driving for every new delivery, that also increased the delivery load tremendously for Tesla. Because if you are not aware, nowadays it's different. Like if they have time, if it's a slow day, whatever, and you're taking delivery of your car, Tesla employees are great and they will show you everything, they answer every question and all that. But if they are short-staffed, end of quarter, there's a rush and everything. The average experience, and I've seen it myself taking deliveries with people, it's like good luck even talking to someone other than for signing some papers. And even then, sometimes it's signed beforehand. They send it to you through the app and you can sign it electronically now. It's like giving you a key, pointing you to a car, getting inside, and that's it. You're gone. Like they don't show you anything. They point you to the center display here. It will show you like tutorial videos and everything. And it's great for the most part. I think, especially nowadays, consumers are a lot more informed. They do their own research and everything. So I don't think it's that big of a deal for most people, but some people would like to have more questions. And it's possible at some times. Now, everyone, not only that won't be the case, a Tesla employee will need to get in the car with you, show you FSD beta, drive with you FSD beta. That's like multiplier on the workload of a delivery. And you know what? I think the timing of that, Elon releasing that, announcing that at the end of the quarter like that, with everything pointing to a bad quarter at Tesla, I think that's an excuse they're going to use for the delivery results.
Really?
Yeah, I think like I wouldn't be surprised like if in the press release, like they have a very short press release with delivery result, and if it's like way down, they're gonna use okay, we have the arson attack in Berlin, which is a fair excuse to be honest with you, like that's a good one. But they're gonna maybe also say also we had higher inventory at the end of the quarter due to a higher delivery workload because of the mandate to use FSD beta, which we think is a safety benefit for a consumer. Like I think I wouldn't be surprised if there's something like that happens, because I'm sure that it would have, because it wouldn't be false, it would have an effect on the deliveries. I'm sure
Now,
it would.
will they have a woke mind virus slowing deliveries as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they would use that in the press release.
Maybe a tweet will come out with that.
But I think this is a major change here.
Yeah, it's
It,
big.
it's it's something to keep in mind. Now, in term, other things are happening with FSD beta at the same time. So this happened last weekend, right after the podcast. Elon announced that Tesla is no longer compute constrained. So some Tesla fan didn't like my headlines here again. Like my headline was Tesla no longer compute constrained, running out of excuses for self-driving. But I think it's fair because, like, if you remember, if you've been following the language and everything around full self-driving at Tesla for 8 years now at this point, there's a lot of things that like evolve and we thought was already baked in. For example, the V12 end-to-end neural net that you're the training of the vehicle and all that. The way it was first announced, we thought that this was always the case, because you remember said that at first Elon was like, hey, using autopilot is like training your dog, like you're training the car. You're telling it how to all to work and everything, and it's gonna learn from you and all that. Turns out that was not true. That was always hard coded by programmers what the car would do. So yes, Tesla was using training data from the fleet with the vision system, but you weren't actually training your car how to react. That is V12 now. Now you're using the car data, the information, feeding that into the vision system, feeding that into the neural nets training system, and improving the car's behaviors that way. So now, so why I say running out of excuses is like, this was supposed to be always the case. Now it is. Now it is in V12 that's being ramped up right now. So that's one fewer excuse. And the other excuse is like, well, to train that neural net that controls the vehicle's behavior, you need compute power to do that at scales because it's video training and video is super heavy. So you need a lot of compute power. And Tesla was constrained in terms of compute. But Elon Musk this weekend announced Tesla is no longer compute constrained. There's a Dojo supercomputer that's come online a few months ago, but I think a lot of people are believe that it's more NVIDIA training compute power that's been deployed by Tesla. Tesla has been apparently spending billions and billions of dollars on NVIDIA compute power. So they've been putting new clusters online, and now training is not a constraint anymore. So what does that mean? That means that now that V12 is there, training compute is there, we should see an extremely high rate of improvement. And if we don't, there's a real problem. Like now I think there's no more excuse. Now Tesla would have to admit that their pathway is not the right one. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm saying that if things continues that way, which the way I'm talking about is like not massive improvements. Like I've had FSD beta for 2 years now, and I've seen some improvement, but over a 2 year path for something like AI, like, I mean, ChatGPT over 2 years has like, is not the same product anymore. Like how, right. Why would Tesla's AI, if it's all AI based, all neural net based, why would it not be improving at a high rate? Now you don't have any excuse. The whole thing is AI based. The training compute is there. We need to see improvements. So I'm still keeping an open mind, saying that it can be improvement, but we need to see it now. And if we don't, and we need to see Tesla release actual data, not tell people, hey, go look at this guy's video on X. It's so great. It's like, it is great, but it's anecdotal evidence. And most of the time, anecdotal evidence happens to be in California and Texas and very nice roads that are, there's no snow, there's no like... So a lot of easy situation. Okay, one last thing about full self-driving that I want to say before we move on is we've seen Tesla now update its language around full self-driving. Tesla and Elon Musk, obviously. So remember, we all remember the 1 million robotaxi by the end of the year. That language has been wiped out of the lexicon at Tesla and Elon. They are not using that. If they're using robotaxi now, they're using the word robotaxi differently. If you remember, robotaxi, 1 million by the end of the year, was Tesla's actual existing fleet being turned into robotaxi through software update. Now
it's a different product.
It's a whole different vehicle. It's an actual vehicle program designed from the ground up to be self-driving, something completely different. Obviously, would leverage similar technology and all that. I'm not saying that's not the case, but still, you don't hear Elon now saying, "Hey, soon enough, by the end of the year, whenever, we're gonna turn your car into a robotaxi that's gonna make you $30,000 a year and make your vehicle an appreciating asset." All these things have been wiped out of Elon's language, by the way, even though he used them to sell millions of vehicles. There's some people that would say that venture into the fraud category. I'm no lawyer, but I think might be an argument there at this point.
I think there will be an argument in some courts, and we'll see. It's interesting. Like, it seems like Tesla is trying to like outrun like legal battles, like you know how it kind of out innovates like copycats. It just seems to like we're gonna just go on to the next thing before the last thing can be even settled.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. It moves fast. You have to admit that.
Yep.
Then after the robotaxi, you had the feature complete language that was used. And that's probably where we are right now. Like the, what the, is Elon's vision of a feature complete is probably this version of FSD beta where all the pieces of the puzzles are there. You have the auto park. You have the highway driving, and now you combine that with the city driving, and you combine all these things together, and now you have all the features for self-driving. You just all need to improve to a level of safety where you don't need to be supervised, and that's the new language now these days. Tesla is calling it supervised full self-driving. Supervised is in parentheses, though, in the language I've been using. So we first saw it appear earlier this week in that email that Elon sent out to employees mandating the demo at each new delivery. Elon said that supervised full self-driving actually works, which is good. Probably, I don't know if a lawyer was involved in that, but that's good because... Yeah, he's right. Supervised full self-driving actually works. It's just now you have to ask yourself what makes it work. Is it the full self-driving part or is it the supervising part? And there's no doubt in my mind that if the full self-driving was not supervised right now, there would be thousands, if not tens of thousands of crashes involved with full self-driving beta opening going up because the drivers stop the car from doing stupid things all the time. So now it appeared in there. And now in the email that Tesla is envoying out for the free trial of FSD beta V12, they are calling it also supervised full self-driving. So they are really banking on that word now to make sure that people understand that it's supervised, which probably should have been something that they should have done since the very beginning. I think that would have helped. But now keep in mind, Tesla didn't sell people supervised full self-driving. They sold the idea of full self-driving period, supervised in the meantime. Now, the way they're including that is like, that's what you're getting now. The promise of what it should be in the future is not being communicated as much from Tesla nowadays. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, so we have two, we'll do some live comments. Fleming Law asks, what's your experience with FSD 12 to me? And then also Elon said everyone would get a 1 month trial of FSD 12. Any update on this? It's the end of the week. We actually have been getting some tips that people are starting to get the 1 month trial of FSD. Mm-hmm. And they're actually, one of them said that it wasn't called beta, but we're following up on that. Mm-hmm. As for me, my experience has been very, like, I got it 2 days ago or a day and a half ago. It is different. It's like stops and starts a little bit differently. It's a little bit smoother in some areas, but rougher in other areas. So I don't know if this is one of those things where you have to take a step back to take a couple steps forward. But it feels like this isn't going to be robotaxi anytime soon. This is kind of like another small iteration. Mm-hmm. And I would almost even say it's not even a step forward. It's kind of a step to the side. Like, things have changed, but I'm very early. I've probably put about 15 miles of full self-driving on.
Have you noticed the speed? A lot of people are complaining about the speed where it's like super cautious on this one. And they're like not even achieving the set speed sometimes.
Yeah. And you know, the interventions that I did were almost always like the guy behind me is going to rear end mm-hmm. me if I don't like get going here. So it's overly cautious and slow for sure.
Yeah. Well, the people say like, even like you set a speed, let's say like 55 miles per hour in a 50 zone and it won't do it, which is weird. Before that, it would do it. And there is this, like, I don't know, it's a controversial idea to have like an autonomous system go a higher speed than the speed limit, but we all know like the driving in some places, like it's completely normal to drive over the speed limit. Like it's,
yeah. And I talked to Mercedes about this. They have the level three self-driving where they are actually responsible. And their point is like, well, if the cop pulls you over for going 56 and a 55, we have to pay that. So mm-hmm. we're not going to make it go over the speed limit. Mm-hmm. So as it gets to level, you know, three and level four, it really can't really break laws. You know, the rolling stop is another good example. Like, everybody rolls through a stop, but mm-hmm. if you can get in trouble for that and the company's responsible for it, they have to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, moving on from full stop. Well, let's thank Alan's question there. Helen Lundberg said, any word on V12 coming to Canada? There, people are reporting getting V12 in Canada right now, so it is happening. Not for me, though. V12, I ain't got a V12 just yet. But it is happening. People are getting it. All right. So the Cybertruck ramp looks to be happening quite a bit. A new drone flyover of GFR Texas yesterday showed like hundreds and hundreds of Cybertruck here. You see a bunch of them there. Like a better look here. You see like a few hundred just here alone. But that's just one parking lot. There's a few parking lot on the drone flyover from Vlad Sloan here. Where you see even some trucks getting loaded on for delivery. So there's a nice little cycle of Cybertruck coming up. We cannot say how many they're producing based on that because we don't know like how many. We don't have the actual rate of it coming out of the factory. But I wouldn't be surprised if Tesla is now close to 1,000 a week. Like that wouldn't be surprising to me at this point because it looks like 100 or so a day or more is a real possibility. However, it's not all good. It's not all good. We've got reports from Tesla Cybertruck, early Cybertruck owners that get some significant failure rate on the units here. We talked to two people that got a Cybertruck. One got it 2 weeks ago, another one just last week. And they had rear motor failure on their car. And it looks like it might be a somewhat widespread. I cannot say how widespread, but they were told by service that it's going to take a little bit for them to be able to repair the cars, the trucks, because of a backlog of on that rear motor that they need to replace. So one of them, I think, was told until like mid-April, and the other one like 2 or 3 weeks from the time it was reported. So it's like, for the first month of ownership of the Cybertruck, it's going to spend more time at the service center than in their garage. And if there's a backlog of on that rear motor, it might be like a more widespread problem than we thought. And also we heard like from MKBHD, for example, his truck that he got a serious panel gap. Elon even commented on it.
I don't think that's a panel gap. That's a broken door.
He said that 15 Cybertrucks in service had this issue with the door striker loosened in the field due to inefficient torque after the door fit. He said it's a 5-minute fix. We've heard other people from other early Cybertruck owners having similar issues. I don't know exactly about this door issue specifically, but panel gaps issues. And it's not like that easy of a fix. So at least maybe it is that easy of a fix, but the service centers are pretty backlogged right now, and they cannot like process them as that fast. So I think Tesla might have had like this might be also an issue about both a quality issue at the factory for sure. There's no doubt about that, but also an issue where the factory is ramping up faster than Tesla's service infrastructure for the Cybertruck, because obviously people need to be trained on the Cybertruck and all that. So Tesla trains its employees, bring them at the factory, trains them, send them back out, and then they train each other and all that. But that takes some time, and Tesla is expanding Cybertruck delivery maybe faster than that is happening. I don't know, but there's a backlog somewhere and still some issues with the quality of the Cybertruck. Now, I want to be fair. Every new vehicle program has some issues at the beginning. However, I think it's fair to highlight Tesla's in this case, because Tesla seems to be having more issues than other automakers in the early production. Simply by nature, Tesla, we talked about, they move super fast. They move quick, and that has its pros and it has its cons, and that's definitely one of the cons of that. All right, moving on from Tesla news, we have a bunch of new vehicle, or at least launch in the U.S. with the Polestar 4. We have the Ford Explorer details in Europe, and we're going to have an update on Fisker. So if you guys enjoyed the show, you can give us a like, a subscribe, and all that. That helps the show a ton, takes a second to do. And if you want to participate into the discussion, you can put in the comment section right now, and we're going to get to them just in a few minutes at the end of the show when we're done talking about these things. All right, GM is in talks with the CATL to license its LFP technology and possibly a joint venture on a plant in North America. So this report came out earlier this week, and it's coming from Car News China. So this is a new model kind of thing. Of course, CATL already had this deal with Ford in the U.S., and that brought a lot of political attention to it, with concern of a Chinese companies controlling battery production in the U.S. The U.S. has had a clear agenda in terms of protectionist when it comes to its auto industry and the transition to electric vehicles and the tax credit being for North American production and all that. So this kind of has been seen as a potential like loophole that's happening that they want to close. But some companies have been finding a little workaround. We've heard about Tesla also being in discussion with CATL about licensing the technology. So the Tesla would own the factory, but use CATL production technology, battery technology to produce the LFP cells in North America. So it's not, there's not that much information on that potential GM deal, but it does sound similar to me. So it does sound like people or American automakers are looking to make this kind of deal with CATL, which should technically bypass this issue. It might still raise some issue, but I think at this point it's pretty fair. Like, I mean, I know there's the main issues with the Chinese companies having a hold in other market is the fact that technically a Chinese company needs to do everything that the Chinese government says. That's just the way they're set up there with the Communist Party. So it is it's kind of like letting the Chinese government here in. It's kind of competing with the government rather than the private company, even though it's technically a private company. So I get those issues. Those are real issues that are probably above my paycheck. But at the same time, you have to give CATL some credit. Like they have expanded battery production more than anyone. They have enabled electrification probably more than anyone other than Tesla, and probably catching up to Tesla at this point, which is the scale they're doing, them and BYD. And they have great technology. Like everyone agrees, like all of the automakers are using CATL now because they have great technology, especially when it comes to LFP. So is it that big of a deal to use their technology, license their technology, and build them in the U.S., still under the control of a U.S. company, in this case GM? Tesla is also rumored to have a similar deal, and use their technology, pay them for it, obviously. I think it's just normal. What do you think, Seth?
Yeah, I mean, the devil's always in the details here. You know, the Ford thing actually, you know, it seemed fair at the beginning, and then, you know, there was a lot of drama and politics about it. So, you know, just to back out a little bit, the LFP technology that CATL is like the best in the world at by far was actually invented in the U.S. I think
that's true. Yeah.
Like Good Enough, I think, was part of that. The guy who recently died at like age 100, you know, and like there was this all was kind of invented here, and then the Chinese picked it up and ran with it, and now they have the best, you know, technology, the LFP technology in the world. And then, you know, we're licensing it back here. I kind of feel like, I don't know, it feels like we should definitely be using this. This is like important for the future of electric vehicles. I don't, you know, again, the devil's in the details. So like, how do we license the technology in a fair way that's not going to, you know, make us vulnerable to China's, you know, whims? So I guess they're working through that.
Well, I think that would be like licensing the technology would be that, but
yeah.
But yeah, I agree that I'm not like an expert in that. So, and to be fair, also China on their side have a lot of protectionist laws too. So it's not like one way. It's like all of the automakers other than Tesla have to have partner with the Chinese companies to produce vehicles in China. So it's a two-way street. All right, Polestar released their U.S. Pricings and spec for the Polestar 4, which is their CUV, midsize SUV type vehicle. Okay, those are the E. Okay, right here. So you have the single range one, which gets the single range, single motor one, like it's 300 miles of range EPA estimated. It's going to start at $56,300. Then you have, if you want to upgrade to a dual motor one, all wheel drive, it's quite the upgrade, $64,300. It's an $8,000 difference.
Yep, big, big motor.
Yeah, for just a different motor because you get less range, 270 miles of range, just the all-wheel drive. And then you get the performance version with the plus and performance packs at $74,300. That also get 270 miles of range. The plus packs, we discussed this last time. It gets like, yeah, it gets the Pilot Pro kit and more luxury features, ADAS system and all that. So yeah, I think this is going to be more of a competitor, like we said, a Model Y competitor, but obviously in pricing, it's not a competitor, but it's a more luxurious vehicle than the Model Y, I believe. So it's going to be more a competitor to two vehicles that we recently discussed, the Porsche Macan EV and the Audi Q6 e-tron. I think those are going to be closer competitor, like the midsize SUV luxury segment. I do like the design of it. Love the Polestar design. Polestar 2 is also great looking. Polestar 3.
Yeah, they had the full lineup at the New York Auto Show, which I was at the last 2 days. They are probably some of the best looking vehicles on the show floor. Definitely. They did a really good job there. You know, obviously the company's a little bit thin right now, but hopefully. The demand for these things is pretty high.
Open order in April, so next month, and it's coming to the market by the end of the year. All right, then we have the Ford Explorer launching in Europe. We also have the specs here. Don't have my charts. I love my charts, guys. All right. Single motor extended range Explorer starts at €45,000. That's $58,000 US. So that's pretty much the equivalent of the Polestar. Although this includes tax, right?
I think that looks like a pounds, but yeah, similar.
That's a pound sign, not EU sign. Okay. 77 kilowatt hour battery pack. If you want to get the dual motor version, just a 2 more kilowatt hour in there. Okay, that's the big pack. And then you have the 52 kilowatt hour pack also for a cheaper price. So starting at £39,000, the equivalent of $50,000 US. And they don't have the range listed. They just have the top range listed at 374 miles, 600 kilometers. That's WLTP. So WLTP doesn't account for a climate control. So take that into account. So that's the Ford Explorer EV for the EU market. Now, Ford in the US doesn't have the Explorer, but we do have the F-150 Lightning. And we've reported last few months, they had some demand issues on that vehicle, and that keeps going. As Ford announced that they are cutting more jobs, 1/3 of the 2,000 workers that work on the F-150 Lightning at Ford's Rouge EV plant in Michigan. So 700 workers are being transferred to its Michigan assembly plant for the Bronco and Rangers. So that's bad news here. F-150 Lightning is having some issues competing with the new entries in the market. Obviously, yeah, the Cybertruck, that's taking a lot of attention. But also the Silverado EV that is attractive in many ways with the much bigger battery pack. And obviously, the Rivian is also still an option for everyone, even though it's been around for a while now. The prices are still good for the Lightning, though. You can get the Lightning on the Flash at $73,000, 320 miles on range. The Flash is still a good deal.
Yeah, that's the one to get, I think. I feel like there's a lot more innovation Ford could be doing with the F-150 Lightning. I mean, you're looking at the Cybertruck as a big competitor there. They've really not done, at the LA, or sorry, the New York Auto Show, they had a it's called a switch something Lightning, which looked amazing. For off-road, they said,
Switch gear, I think.
yeah, something like a switch gear. Looks amazing, like great aesthetic. It looks like it could just barrel off-road. But they don't make that version, and it's a little bit frustrating because I feel like they could probably sell a ton of those.
That would be kind of the Raptor version of the Lightning.
Right.
All right, we're gonna finish up on an update on Fisker, and then we're gonna jump into your comment section. So if you guys have any questions for us about things that we discussed today or any other topics in the EV world that you want us to get into, we're gonna have plenty of time to get into that if you put it in the comment section right now. So Fisker is basically done. I think we've been discussing their route to bankruptcy for the last few months, so well, the last few years, really. I remember actually with Scooter, way back then, like Scooter tried out the he was the first on our team to try out the Ocean. He was like, with the early version, it was pretty impressed. I was like, yeah, there's a chance. I'm like, I was always telling Scooter, be careful with Fisker, like, don't get your hopes up, because I've been around for a while, and I know, I remember how Fisker came about. Not the original, obviously, the original Fisker went bankrupt too. But the relaunch of the company was, if you were around with the early days of 2016, 2017, 2018, it was a mess of a company. Like, I was surprised that they managed to get that Magna deal, bring the Ocean to production. A lot of people saw that as like, all right, this might actually work. I was impressed that they did that, but thinking that it works, it was never in the cards for me. So what's the update this week is that they screwed all their early customers big time by just slashing the price of the Ocean in the last ditch effort to survive. The Ocean Sport, which I don't even know they delivered that one, but was starting at $39,000. They slashed that to $25,000, which they weren't already making money off of that. Now it's $14,000 less. The Ocean Ultra went from $53,000 to $35,000, and the Ocean Extreme, so that's the model they started with, they've been delivering a lot, that's $61,500 down to $37,500. That's a $24,000 price difference. So you can imagine that all the people that took delivery of the Ocean Extreme in the last few months are like, what the hell? My car is not worth anything anymore, because you just slashed the price in half almost. So now everyone is just trying to get rid of their Ocean, obviously. So you can get one for even cheaper than that right now. Use one, because everyone is trying to get in off their hands, because they know what's happening next, obviously, is Fisker going under, and no service on those cars anymore. You're gonna have to go third party, you're gonna have to go super expensive. There's not gonna be any parts for it. You're basically screwed. Which is the risk of dealing with these smaller startups. It's a problem sometimes. I mean, some other updates too, I guess we should talk about, because that happened just right after the last podcast. But the Nissan deal that was rumored is off the table.
Right.
Fisker confirmed that they're not discussing with other automakers anymore. So that deal fell through. Not surprising. We told you after the Nissan Honda matchup last week, we were like, I doubt that they're going to announce a Honda matchup and then a Fisker one right after. It's unlikely. So that's done. They got some money over the last week or two, but it's not nearly enough to survive. And now these price slash, I don't know what they're trying to do with that exactly, because I mean, I don't know, probably they have inventory right now, and they want to, because they did stop production like last week too. So they're sitting on some inventory, and they want to get rid of it to get some money in, even though it's at a loss, to restructure the company maybe. But they have hundreds of millions in debt, over 100 million in payables, and they had that billion-dollar convertible note. Like, it's just, it's however they can do to like restructure the company, it's not going to be the same company anymore. And Fisker is going to lose control. And Rick Fisker, I mean, going to lose control like any day now.
Again,
they missed a few payments and it's done. The investor is going to, the creditors going to take over. And unfortunately, I don't know what they're going to do with it. Like there's
nothing. Yeah, I mean, they could chop up the company and, you know, sell it out. Maybe, you know, maybe Honda or whatever will lowball some crazy low price for the technology and maybe they'll keep the current fleet running. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the other vehicle programs, like all the things that were announced at Fisker Day, whatever, like I'm pretty sure that's worthless at this point. Like it's just too early in the program. The Ocean is worth something. Like if you think you can fix the issues with it, like maybe you can bring something back that is worth something. I don't think the brand is worth that much. Like at this point, like went bankrupt twice, like Fisker brand has always more been associated with design. I don't think it carries enough credibility to be worth anything on the market right now. So I don't know how a company comes in and salvage this, to be honest. But if they are, I'm sure there are some rupture circling in right now, trying to see if there's a deal to be made for peanuts, because the creditors are going to want to get something out of it. And probably there's a few hundred millions to be made, maybe, but no major deal, in my opinion. All right, let's jump into the comments to end this early show this week due to travels requirements.
Yeah, so let's get in there. We talked about the FSD experience. Mm-hmm. We talked about Canada. Mm-hmm. Paul Thurgood from X or Twitter says, you obviously have not driven it enough, 12.3. Almost all have said step change improvement. I will say that the first round of 12.3 beta testers who are, you know, I would kind of say the usual suspects, gave it all, you know, glowing reviews. As more and more people got into it, we started to hear about, hey, this is, things driving really slow, you know, 2, 5, 10 miles per hour.
Hitting curbs. We heard a few people hitting curbs.
Yeah. There was a lot of little stuff. It is like, so I will admit, or I will say that it is a different set of software, because different things that annoy me happened, and things that used to annoy me were fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think everybody's going to have kind of a different experience based on where you're driving, how the roads are, what your expectations are, et cetera. Let's move on to Jose. Wow, early pod. Yeah, we did. I'm flying out to Colorado tonight. So FSD 12.3.2 is awesome here in SoCal. Happy Friday. So I don't have 0.3.2. I just have 0.3. It would be nice to get on the latest and try that out. But I'm not going to get to do that for at least another week here. FSD 12 drives about 2 miles below the speed limit for me, and that's with zero traffic.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying that makes it kind of useless. And I get, because it's so frustrating. Like to be useful, it has to feel kind of normal driving. And if you're just like, damn, like people are like piling up behind you, and it's not ideal.
Yeah, that was my experience as well. I just couldn't deal with how slow it was going. Comment, just took my Model Y long range for a test drive on FSD 12.3. The first impression is mind blowing. My 8-year-old said it felt like I was driving.
Okay. Well, okay, I don't know about your 8-year-old's opinion of it. And also, I don't know about mind-blowing. That seems like to be copy-pasted from an Elon Musk tweet. But I do understand that. I'm not going to deny your experience. And I know some people are like really impressed with it. I don't know where you're based to, because obviously the experience in California and where there's a lot of driving data coming in has been better. We have the Jose here also saying that in SoCal it's great. I would assume that it's better there for sure.
All right, Guy Rogers says, Gonzalo Zamora, same. I thought something was wrong because mine kept sticking at anywhere from 2 to 10 miles per hour below the set speed. Wow, that's exactly mine. With no car ahead, very frustrating. Yeah.
I'm having some issues with the speed on also on even on V11, where I turn on a road and it assumes that the road is 40 kilometers an hour, where there's no I don't know any road in Quebec that's 40 kilometers an hour. Like, if normally the base one is 50, then you have like 30 in some places that like a super high residential or like
school or something.
school places, school areas and all that. But normally it's like 50 is normal. And so 40, they pick that up, and then it won't update it until it actually sees a 50 limit. And then it's 40. So I put it up to 60, where I would be driving normally myself 60, and then it sees the 50, and then it passed the 50, and it goes, the limit goes up to 50, but my driving speed goes down to 50, even though it was at 60. Makes no sense. Like, we just bumped up. You'd think we bumped up 10 kilometers an hour, which we didn't, because it was always 50. And you go down to 50, even though I set it to 60. And I'll always set the limit over the speed limit, because otherwise it's so frustrating. So there's a lot of issues like that that makes no sense. Also, I'm still getting some slowdown in the highways, but they're not necessarily phantom braking anymore. So it's not like actually braking on the highway. It's driving. I'm set at 118 kilometers an hour, which is completely normal in Quebec, driving that speed on the highway. And then it will slow down to 110 for no reason. Even though I'm still set at 118, it will just like feel like slowing down when passing. Sometimes that's the most frustrating. I'm passing someone,
Yeah.
and then as I'm going back in the right lane, it starts slowing down in front of them. It's dangerous stuff. I'm like, things like that are so frustrating. You have to keep a close eye on. So yeah, in the next few weeks, everyone in North America is going to get FSD beta trials and all that, and it's. Elon is going to tell you that it's to prove that it works and it's a safety thing and all that, but let's be clear, it's an attempt at getting you to buy the FSD beta package and to improve Tesla's profit in a tough quarter. That's all it is. You're more than welcome to try it. Of course, I'm not going to tell you not to try it, but if you do, please be careful. Please remember, it's supervised full self-driving, and the supervision part is the true safety part. The safety addition is the fact that you should be super high alert, even more alert than usual when driving, and that makes it more safe, not the car. Maybe the car can save you, but you're gonna save the car a lot more than the car saving. That's a pure fact. In an average driving day, you're gonna save the car a lot more than the car is gonna save you. So keep that in mind. Now, it's still cool features and impressive how it works, but be careful. And I haven't tried it myself yet. I'm supposed to get it, but I've got two updates this week on my Model 3 and still no V12 on it. So I'll be trying it out soon, because I'm doing plenty of driving this weekend. So hopefully I get it soon and I can
Yeah,
check it
maybe
out.
they'll even bump you up over to 12.3.2,
Yeah,
which
you see,
sounds better.
you just got 12.3. You don't have anything after
Yeah,
the 3. That's interesting.
I didn't get that update.
All right, not a big deal. All right, so thanks everyone for listening. Please be safe out there, drive safe, and we're going to see you same time, same place next week. Bye bye.